You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Expressed on this program are the responsibility of those who make them. They do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates.
And welcome to you, ladies and gentlemen, whoever you are. Wherever you may happen to be, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Those of you joining us tonight for the very, very first time, a special welcome to you. We're delighted you're here, and I hope you come back again and again and again. The K-Files e-zine went out today, and we have been in the process, you know, recovering from all of this massive computer attack, and it was rather extreme. One of the things that happened is in all of this, and I won't go into all the details, but our database got scrambled, not by the attack. It was a result of the attack. We had to actually migrate to another server, and when we did that, our database for our e-zine subscribers sort of got scrambled, and amazingly, all of the addresses are okay. The thing that kind of got scrambled, though, was the names. And so if you received your K-Files e-zine today, be sure you respond to where we ask you if your name, there's a certain place there, it says if your name doesn't appear here, or if it's wrong, then click this link and send us your name to put back in the database. So be sure that you pay attention to that. We need that. Now, look, if you're not subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, that's our free weekly newsletter. It's been going out now for 7 years, and 7 years this month. This month is our seventh year birthday. Now, people have asked me, well, what is the actual birthday? You know, I really don't know. I'd have to look back on a calendar and see. But whatever was the first Monday in March in the year 2000, that was our birthday. Okay, so, but March is our seventh year birthday. And we've got people. I was going through the database today and looking. We have people in that database still subscribing who started back in 2000 and have been getting the K-Files e-zine each and every week for all of this time. And I'll tell you what, I really appreciate you. And, you know, you helped us to get started. And today we have subscribers all over the world. We have an audience all over the world. And you folks that started with us back in March of 2000, you have made it happen, and I appreciate it. And then each person who's come along since as a listener and subscriber has done their part to make it happen, and I appreciate you all. I really do. Now that we're into March, it's time for us to go vote for the podcast again, okay? Please help us out with that, because that helps us to obtain and retain the sponsors that make it possible for us to pay the bills and continue to bring you the great guests and the great shows. And you can help us. Doesn't cost a penny. All you have to do is just click on over to kevinsmithshow.com, kevinsmithshow.com, and scroll down there. You'll see where in big letters it says Vote for Our Podcast. Just click on that, it'll take you to Podcast Alley and to our page on Podcast Alley, and just click on vote. That will send you a confirmation email, and you click on their link. The whole process, believe me, it takes about half a minute. But it's so important. Really, it is. So please help us with that, okay? My guest this evening, Michael Tsarian, and we'll be back with him after these messages. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today.
Man, I wish I was in shape like that guy.
Yeah, I wonder how he trains to look that good.
Hey guys, I'm going over to GNC to pick up some supplements. You want to go?
Now at GNC, Joe Weider's Victory Kit, scientifically designed for mass cuts and power cycle training. The Victory Line for the ultimate body. For the beginner to the pro and everyone in between, GNC, the authority in sports nutrition.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at your Blockbuster store or Blockbuster.com.
Gordy! What's with your bro? He gave me a Reggie Bush, and all he wanted was my Panthers.
Tell me about it. I've got a Tom Brady for a bunch of defensive backs.
You're so lucky.
He gave me a Manning autograph from Barber, Portis, and Alexander. How crazy is that?
Not so crazy, because now every new Upper Deck football card is worth valuable points, so you could win great prizes. Go to upperdeckkids.com for free entry. Get a parent's permission before going online, and get more than lucky.
Hey, how's the coverage with that phone?
It doesn't work that great everywhere, but
that doesn't come back to bite me.
Hello?
There's been a mistake. You took home a poisonous cottonmouth.
I missed that last part. What?
It could bite you.
I lost shit.
Hello?
Besides, I'm playing with my snake.
Wish you were on a more reliable wireless network. Verizon Wireless has the fewest drop calls of any national carrier.
Good.
Come give Daddy kids.
Yeah. Verizon Wireless. We never stop working for you.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is someone who's been with us before. I'm delighted that he is back with us. His name is Michael Tsarian. And, Michael, welcome back to the show.
Kevin, it's very nice to be back. Thank you for the invitation to come on your show.
A little bit of your background for those who may not be familiar. You were born in Ireland. You're a researcher of the occult. You're an author, public speaker, producer of a series called Origins and Oracles, and the list really just goes on. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just laughing at. Well, thank you for that, yes. Believe me, public speaker, wasn't by a choice, but yeah, you're quite right. Being thrust out into the, public eye for whatever reason, I'm still trying to work out how that exactly happened, but there you go.
Well, you can't expect to do the research you've done and then write about it and not have people like me call and say, let's talk about it. And that...
Exactly, it seems to have happened. I think that I really, should be blaming Jordan Maxwell. He never shut up himself about me, and he kept putting the word out for me. And it's very, very much, when I look back just in the last, couple of years, I can really see that he was instrumental in making sure that people were, paying attention to what I was saying. But again, I was just happy to listen to him and to, you know, check out his information and the study in the background. It was, again, not of my own sort of a will that suddenly ended up, you know, doing public conferences and even anything public, you know, even a book or any of that. All the things sort of led on from, you know, people like Jordan insisting to their friends that, you know, people get into what I was doing, which is very unusual. And, you know, it's worked out fine and everything, and we are in an age in which some pretty peculiar things are happening in people's lives. I keep getting emails and comments from people who say there's so many dramatic changes happening in their lives at all levels. So when I hear that, when I hear, you know, people who would consider themselves lay people, people who, you know, I mean, don't we know it for sure, that since 9/11 even, you'll constantly hear that refrain of people saying, you know, hey, I was asleep. You couldn't have woken me up for love nor money when it came to any of these subjects. I completely resisted it all. And suddenly when, you know, 9/11 happened, you know, my eyes started to open and I started to question. So, yeah, it was a traumatic, you know, situation, a terrible, terrible event. But look at the sort of positive aspect of it as well. So there's so many radical changes happening in the world. So when I look at my life, I kind of don't worry about it too much. And I pretty much, you know, get to understand that the course that was chosen, or the course that was chosen for me, you know, is the right one.
You know, you used a phrase that since 9/11, look at all of the radical changes that have happened. It's really to a point now, Michael, where every day when I look at the news, I see nothing but radical. There's nothing normal happening much anymore in the news. The really abnormal, the really radical stuff is what is capturing the news now.
That's right. And, of course, it sometimes this can, you know, I mean, people can approach the reasons for this in so many ways. I've tried to analyze it astrologically. You know, my DVDs go into that, but let's get a handle on why this is happening because, you know, R.D. Lang, the great Scottish psychologist, he said that time speeds up so fast sometimes that the only time when we see the present is when it's already past us and become the past. So we have to get a handle on why these things are happening. Otherwise, people can really go berserk. You know, there's chronic alcoholism in the world right now. There's chronic dependency. You know, none of that needs to be. And a lot of times when people are confronted by change, we've been programmed that change is wrong or change is bad. And, of course, if it's radical change, if it's sort of really radical change, which has, as you say, been happening of late, that can throw people for a loop. And a lot of people don't have a center, they're not able to handle it, and they get really out of there. And then what can happen is there can be a reaction to that, in which they can become, again, more conservative, more fixed, you know, try to cleave to the same old, the same old religions, the same old paradigms. And, of course, we do see that reaction happening. And, of course, the Bush government has made great use of that. I'm no fan of government, but anyone can see that America was doing not so bad under Clinton, et cetera, et cetera, if you want to talk politics for a moment.
No, I don't. We don't do politics.
Right.
Okay, but...
You know, suddenly, there's this reaction.
But let me say this. A lot, and this is not political, this has to do with a lot of our foreign policy. A lot of the debacles into which we have... found ourselves immersed were things that I'm not going to lay it in Clinton's lap. It goes back beyond Clinton. It goes all the way back to the Reagan era, and he's one of my favorite presidents. But a lot of these events that are unfolding around us, the seeds of these events, now we perhaps at the time could not recognize that it would unfold to this, but the seeds were being planted as far back as the Reagan presidency, and
yes.
They've begun to germinate, and not only germinate, they're now beginning to be in full bloom and bear fruit themselves, and they're pretty nasty. One of the problems that reason I get a lot of emails saying, why are you afraid of politics? I'm not afraid of it. It's just that it's not, you know, I'm not afraid of cooking either. Well, that's not what the show's about. We don't
that's
do a
right.
cooking show. But as far as talking about the seeds and their origins, that's not politics. And, you know, you've got some pretty interesting things that you say about these seeds that go way back, way, way beyond when we even had a president, back beyond George Washington. And a lot of the seeds for the world we live in were being planted centuries ago. You talk about a bloodline.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about this going back centuries and who's behind this.
Excuse me. I'm glad you brought that up because, you see, the first thing that Americans have to understand is that the foreign policies, the political policies, and you're right, politics is not bad. But what America has to realize is that the policies of the American government are not American policies, period. You know, the policies of Wolfowitz and Searle and his clan and anyone else, and as you say, you can take it back. This existed with Colonel Mandel House back at the time of Woodrow Wilson. You know, these kind of internationalistic policies. And you can go back even to the opening of the first Federal Reserve and all of that scenario. So obviously, in American context, there's American politics, which is one thing. And then there's this alien politics, which has roots, as you say, far, far beyond, you know, the founding of America, far beyond the establishment even of the first kingships of England, believe it or not. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, so many American presidents are related by blood, as I hope a lot of your listeners now know this kind of information. There's a reason why so many presidents are related by blood to British and European monarchs. There's reasons why people like Clinton would be going to Europe and getting Charlemagne medals of honor, you see, and all of these so-called awards. There's symbolic reasons as to why, and it's because a lot of these people, including this Gore and so many others of his ilk, and even a lot of their wives, and certainly a lot of the people that the public do not see.
What is that reason?
I have a DVD coming out in the future that will talk about the more shadowy figures and their connections and their philosophies.
So what is the reason why?
European dynasties. And these European dynasties, which are mostly situated, of course, in London, but also in Belgium and also in Holland, going back through the old Habsburg line and through the Hanoverian line. Now, of course, America, being very historically amnesiac, doesn't really know that much. And that's why I keep encouraging the youth and encouraging American people in general to start getting into history, to discover not so much the subject of history, but how the subject of history is being manipulated. Because that's a very interesting subject. And once we discover the real roots of it, you know, it really goes back to Egypt and even beyond. But there's a whole traceable line because Europe and the cities of Europe and the great royal houses and dynasties did not just come in, you know, overnight, autonomously. They didn't just happen to, you know, get created. Cities and the whole matrix, if we want to use that word, did not just, you know, get founded overnight. It's an incredible industry that we find ourselves today in the situation that we are. The Industrial Revolution, the Agricultural Revolution.
So where does all this come from? How does it start?
Yeah.
Yeah, where does it come from?
Where does it all come from?
Yeah.
Well, of course, if people are familiar with my Atlantis work, then you're talking about the visitation of off-world beings who interfered with our DNA. But I'm working right now on another side to this, because in the book that I, you know, in the Atlantis book, there were so many things that I couldn't get into because of space and time and also its clarity. You want to make the story clear. So one of the things that was really fascinating, Kevin, is Egypt's role in all of this. Egypt's role in the story of the Nephilim and the story of the power elites. And that's what I'm working on now is a book. Its title is The Irish Origins of Civilization. And it should be ready in the springtime or early summer. And even though it's about Ireland, it's also about the connections between Ireland and Egypt. And one of the most amazing things to discover is the role of Egypt, especially the Akhenaten and the cults of the sun. Because a lot of what you're seeing today in politics is not politics, as you've rightly said already. It is solar ideology. It's stellar religion. It's actually a form of religion, as Jordan Maxwell has said many times. And so the symbols that you find on the state buildings and the regalia, and also some of the policies, and also the people who work to manifest these policies are members of secret societies, some of them very secret, very profound. And it's just, it's sort of a miracle that this information is now coming out. It's one of the things that people need to really remember. We're living in extraordinary times in which we, as the human race, are able to find out things about this hidden hand that our forefathers had no hope in hell of ever discovering. And now because of the internet and because of scholars and researchers and because of just the change astrologically and the kind of consciousness, the changes in consciousness, we're able to discover. But we're never going to understand where we are. We're never going to understand the future and where we're going unless we understand where we've come from. So the role of Egypt, and particularly the whole question of Akhenaten, the famous Tutankhamun, and that particular family is now what I'm into, and it connects with Atlantis. It talks about after the great cataclysms that a new civilization was set up all over the world, and one of these, of course, was in Egypt. We know that's obvious, that a great civilization was set up in Egypt. But the thing we don't understand is that Ireland and Egypt were connected. There was commerce to South America. There was tremendous interconnectivity between so many places that we've been fraudulently told by historians and geologists that there was no such connection between these places. And now, luckily, even on Discovery Channel, you see, and the work of people like Graham Hancock and so many others, and it's becoming a little bit more understood that this is nonsense, because you're finding, you know, tobacco in Egypt. You're finding pictures of elephants in South America. You know, there's things that just don't add up with the old paradigm that's been handed down to us by schools and colleges and universities.
So, you, last time you were here, talked about that this is traceable, actually, all the way back to a reptilian off-world race.
Yes,
if I understood correctly.
Pardon?
If I understood correctly, the last time you were here, you were saying that this is traceable back to a reptilian off-world race.
That's right. Well, they weren't reptilian themselves. They were humanoid. But they're responsible for creating us. They're responsible for crossing their DNA with animals to create the reptilians. And they're also responsible for creating basically us. Because I don't refer to to man, Kevin, as Homo sapiens, Homo intelligent. He doesn't look that intelligent to me anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I refer to him as Homo Atlantis, a being that was actually created on Atlantis who's part human DNA, meaning DNA from this planet, indigenous to this planet, and also DNA from off-world beings. And this is what I go to in the Atlantis book, and it is from that particular violation. It's from that particular breach of sovereignty that the whole concept of man's immorality and man's, you know, injustice and what we would call evil in the world, because when we're facing the problems politically in the world today, you see, or of all of the violations that have happened, all the atrocities of human beings to human beings, humanity onto humanity, or we're dealing with the interpersonal moral questions. You see, we're dealing with evil. We're dealing with a particular penchant of human beings that I don't believe is natural. And this is where I differ from so many Darwinians, you know, and atheists and people who just say, look, evil came into being just from the movement of nature, you know. Or I don't believe in what the Christians are talking about, where it's just some original sin and it's part of God's plan that we do these kinds of things, or that we're being tempted by some sort of, you know, devil. All of this is nonsense. There's a very, very scientific factuality behind this concept that I talk about in the Atlantis book. And, you know, every couple of weeks there's more information being leaked out, more revelations coming. People can come to my blog or they come to my website, and I keep updating all the latest discoveries, you know, in genetics. And some of the stuff is amazing that they're discovering. They're almost admitting, and when I say they, I mean the establishment, the ones whose own genetic history and bloodline goes back to these fallen angels. They're almost leaking it out, almost admitting it. And certainly symbolically, they've been saying it for many, many years, that this is in fact true, that man is a schizoid being. He is a result of an experiment. And then we come in, or I come in, you know, and say, look, if this is true, if man is then even in his biological nature, Kevin, if he is a schizoid being, then is it really surprising that when we see these schizogenic societies that are so fractured and so, you know, just incoherent, and there's so much craziness collectively? Well, it's not surprising to me.
So you think that schizoid behavior of human society then is part and parcel of our DNA?
Yes, but you see, don't forget that even though it is a biological component here, and even though a very advanced scientific off-world coterie that the Bible refers to as the Nephilim, and that the mythologies talk about as the Anunnaki and so on, although they did tamper with us biologically, let us never forget that biology is subservient to consciousness. And, of course, this tampering happened approximately probably in the region of 50,000 years ago. So, yes, we have been tampered with biologically, but now it's a question also of consciousness. Consciousness can dominate your DNA. Consciousness can dominate your biology. So when we see these people, you know, acting immorally in the world, of which there's many people, you don't even have to go to the government level to find colossal emotional and physical violence being perpetrated in the world. You have gangs, you know, you have all sorts of violations. In fact, what concerns me, or what at least I have a particular eye for, is not so much worldwide universal forms of violence, but the more subtle, unseen forms of violence that happen on a daily basis between human beings. You know, parents to their children, workmates, you know, the sort of passive-aggressive stuff, and psychic violence, also a form of psychic violence, because I've also written on that. So there's an entire question of violence, of evil, and instead of running away from it, instead of, you know, getting pacified, pretending not to see it there, or imagining it's just some dark side that, you know, it's too murky for us for the average man to worry about, or that the church is going to fix it tomorrow when they find out what the answer is, you know, and all of this stuff, or just saying it's somebody else's problem. You know, man needs, especially Western man, really needs to get the grips.
Okay, we have to take a break. Folks, we'll be back. On the other side of this break, more with Michael Sarian. Don't go away.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at the Blockbuster Store or Blockbuster.com.
Man, I wish I was in shape like that guy.
Yeah, I wonder how he trains to look that good.
Hey guys, I'm going over to GNC to pick up some supplements. You want to go?
Now at GNC, Joe Weider's Victory Kit, scientifically designed for mass, cuts, and power cycle training. The Victory Line for the ultimate body. For the beginner to the pro and everyone in between, GNC, the authority in sports nutrition.
Human behavior, the Dark Ages, only on the History Channel.
Gordy!
What's with your bro? He gave me a Reggie Bush, then all he wanted was my Panthers.
Tell me about it. I've got a Tom Brady for a bunch of defensive backs.
You're so lucky.
He gave me a Manning autograph from Barber Portis and Alexander. How crazy is that?
Not so crazy, because now every new Upper Deck football card is worth valuable points, so you could win great prizes. Go to upperdeckkids.com for free entry. Get a parent's permission before going online and get more than lucky.
Welcome back to Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Michael Sarian. Michael, you mentioned that, you know, there's this, if we go far enough back, there's this race of off-worlders, extraterrestrials, if you will, who did some tinkering around with some genetics. As a result, they created us, they created the reptilians, and I have now a couple of questions for clarification. First of all, why did they create reptilian beings?
Well, they were a subsequent creation, and they basically did that because they were so fed up crossing their DNA with humans. It didn't work. It was very troublesome, and they couldn't find the perfect slave. They couldn't find the perfect, dupe or worker, I mean. So particularly the Maya codex, the Maya books, but also many from India and South America, also from India and from Sumeria, talk about the fact that then they decided to try to cross their DNA with fauna, with various kinds of animals. And this is where we have the mythological creatures you see, like the Minotaur and the Centaur and the Unicorn and the Sirens and even the dragon beings. In fact, the serpent or the dragon has been one of the insignias of these people that we're talking about, or of these beings that we're talking about. Not because they themselves look reptilian, but it's just, you know, it's a matter of symbolism. I go into that in the book. But they created the reptilians because they just got fed up not being served properly. And they left out the human, DNA completely at some point and decided to cross with these reptiles.
Okay, so why did they cross their DNA with pre-us to create us?
Yeah, for slaves. This is what most of the ancient mythologies are absolutely, they have the consensus on that point. It's that old, concept from John Milton, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. These beings have been basically persona non grata in their own planet. And they came here and set themselves up as kings. But if you're lords, then you're much of a lord unless you have people to serve you. So these were people who did a tremendously violent, a violation, which the world is still reeling from, in fact. When people really get around this concept, they'll not only be able to explain the coming of evil into the world, but many other things, because this is what the ancient scriptures and legends, this is what the ancestral knowledge of our ancients is talking about, that there was these violations of Earth sovereignty. And that these individuals, just like some hideous Planet of the Apes type experimentation, basically did not look at us as being worthy of life and thought they could do with us, just like today you see in laboratories all over the world, people looking at animals as if they can just be strapped down, and injected and torn to pieces in laboratories for so-called experiments. This is exactly the mentality.
So what were we before they... Before they mixed their DNA with ours, what were we?
Well, this is the question that really nobody can answer. There's only speculation. I don't have the answer to that. I would turn to one of the people in fiction that I certainly refer people to is Professor Tolkien, who's some of his beings and some of the way he describes his so-called Middle Earth. People will maybe need to look into that to get a sort of a glimpse of what might have existed before. I certainly do not believe, and one thing that I do not believe, is that we were these primitive, sort of Cro-Magnon,
Neanderthal
type entities, hominids. I think there were hominids, obviously, on this planet. We can see the bones of the, obviously, there's the evidence. But, that might be just one kind of being on this planet. So the case is really open for what kind of people lived before and what kind of level. Now, science is saying there was no level. Science was saying these people were very, totally primitive. But we're talking Stone Age people here. But, maybe, again, as I said, those theories are being shot down every month. So, we really don't know. Before the intervention took place, before the off-world visitation, one of the most fascinating questions is what was really here before and how intelligent was it, So we're still really looking for the answer to that.
All right, now, they've created us and they've created a race that you refer to as reptilian. we are still here. What about the reptilians?
Oh, they're still here.
Well,
because you remember that when you cross humanoid DNA, now the Nephilim who came here look like human beings. They're humanoid. They may have slight differences in height or whatever, and the ancient books describe this, but they basically describe that they're humanoid. But when you cross alien DNA, that humanoid DNA with an animal, it's like any birth. It's like any birth of any couple. Sometimes the offspring can look very much like one parent, and sometimes they can look very much like the other parent. So it's the same situation with the reptilian. All reptilians don't need to look like, you know, reptiles with scales and with long tails. Those beings did exist openly up until about the Middle Ages, and then something happened where they phased those out. There's theories now that those beings live under the earth, that as soon as a child is born of these people that looks reptilian, they're sequestered away. But there are reptilian beings that can look very humanoid, and you wouldn't be able to know from physical looking that this person is a reptilian. You'd only know through using your intuition, and many clairvoyants and many sensitive people, you see, swear blind, not that anyone's listening to them, that sometimes when they say, I don't like that person, or that person has, you know, a certain kind of energy, or this person is not human, we laugh at those people. We've locked them up for centuries. Anyone who would say anything like this, you know, we've locked them up. We totally marginalize those people. But back in the Middle Ages, this was absolutely normal. You know, the stories of Beowulf, the stories of a young hero going out to, you know, fight a dragon being or some sort of entity. This was all common knowledge not so long ago. It's only in the modern, most recent times in history that all the things that I'm talking about, you know, have suddenly become, you know, taboo, and people don't know anything about it.
Well, you know, there's an interesting phenomena that I have noticed. I've lived in a lot of places on this planet, and I've visited even more. And I've discovered wherever you go, most people sort of have this belief, this underlying belief, that the rest of the world is not so much different from right where their feet are standing. And I think we do the same thing with history. I think we look at where we are and what the world looks like now, and we think it's not all that different if we go back 100 years, 500 years, 1,000, 10,000 years. The difference is only in the technology. I've heard people say that.
That's a great, great point. It's a great, great point. It comes with this whole problem of historical amnesia. Remember, we also have pressures today. People have a lot of pressures, so they're not even, you know, having a lot of mental space to be giving it real thought about what happened, hey, X amount of years ago, or, you know, how did the Habsburg dynasty come into existence, blah, 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 you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's not the reality, you know, unless it happens to be on TV for 5 seconds or some sort of entertainment. People aren't going to really question a lot of this stuff. They don't have a lot of time. And, of course, then I've always said in my work that the 21st century, the 20th century, is probably the worst vantage point for looking back at history, because we are so prejudiced in so many ways. Our vision, you know, cosmically, spiritually, religiously, psychologically, is so skewed that, you know, when we look back at the legacy of the ancestors and what they were doing, even if we consider just the usage of time and the whole concept of time, you know, musicians know this, so when they study instruments and when they study singing and when they study how orchestras played just even back at the time of Beethoven, they know, or Vivaldi, they know there was a completely different sense of rhythm and timing than what we have today.
So even tuning,
take any of the fundamentals.
Even in tuning, an orchestra today tunes to A440, which means the A string vibrating at 440 vibrations per second. But in the time of Beethoven, I think it was A360. It was much lower.
Well, so, I had heard something similar, but I didn't know the facts. Is that right? That's very interesting.
Yeah, that's the truth. And I know that because I used to be a professional musician and a music major. And as one of the first things I learned in music theory. But the world is very different, and it's not only the technology. Even today, If you think that people around the world are all pretty much the same, you haven't been all around the world, because their worldviews are very different. Their views of what is good and evil, very different. Their views about the purpose of life, very different. And all of this creates the world in which we live, the soup in which we swim. And if you take that and multiply it times centuries and millennia, then, you know, the world in which we live today, wherever we stand, it's quite a different soup than people two millennia ago were swimming in.
Yeah.
Now,
there's no doubt in my mind that you're right. And this particular diversity, I mean, even though you see a lot of samity, and of course if the media had their way and the governments have their way, there'd be even more conformity. But leaving that aside for a moment, I myself am always conscious of the diversity of people, the utterly utter difference of people. And that can be a good thing and a bad thing. I'm also very conscious of the fact that even though we don't pay history a lot of mind, and even though we don't, and that the realities of the past were different than they are now, we still, psychologically and biologically, are the products of that past. So whether we like it or not, you see, we are eternally articulated to that which has happened. So it's not that people should become, you know, overly involved in living in the past, certainly not psychologically, ever that should happen. But people need to intellectually, with objectivity, discover a little bit about where they've come from, because it's very crucial to the times that we're living in. But you see, this, I mean, people in a way, without knowing what you said, without being able to articulate it as well as you did, there is a certain level of people that does know that we're very different, one and all. To say it another way, don't we know that, you know, a beautiful face can hide a very evil nature? So people, for instance, you know, have discovered to their horror that there are no absolutes in people, and that you can't just say because of a person's outward appearance or even by their words, you really can't tell anything about those people because they can hide behind a mask. So
that is
on
so
level,
true.
That's our constant reminder that even our closest friends, you see, and associates, we always discover, you know, new things about their private lives, and often it's well known to everyone that's listening to us, this has happened to so many people, that we have a shocker when it comes to discovering, you know, just how fundamentally different people are than what we thought. So it's part projection on our part, it's part wishfulness on our part, and it's part false expectation, but there's also a law, there's also a factual law that we cannot ever account for people based on what they say and what they look like. There is so much difference, and this is can be often very, very perplexing for people.
Well, that's true, and we have seen down through history a good example of it, where you have the leader of some country talking peace while waging war, or while preparing an aggression, and yet talking peace. And one that comes to mind is Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler had some beautiful speeches about peace, world peace. But he was a tornado straight from hell when it came to actions. And, you know, it's so true that a beautiful face can hide really abject evil.
That's right.
Well, it doesn't hide it, but it can cover it for a while.
It can cover it for a while. I mean, obviously, if you have the opportunity to give the person more scrutiny, then you can obviously get on the right track. But, you know, since we often don't have that opportunity, and since evil conceals its face, you know, very adroitly sometimes, it can be difficult. But you're absolutely right. We can have popes, you know, who are meant to be the, you know, champions of enlightenment and knowledge, turning around and telling you, because what you mentioned, Hitler, brought this to mind, that, you know, there's quotes from the leading Jesuit publication saying fascism is the closest political system to the tenets and concepts of, you know, Catholicism or to the Vatican. So, I mean, everywhere we look, we find this duplicity and this treachery. And this is to remind us that just as much as, you know, media or the system wants to homogenize people, you cannot account for the spectrum, the scale between the moral scale of people, for instance, is very, very wide and will never, ever cease to amaze me just how that works.
We are going to have to take a break, and when we come back from this break, we'll be talking with Michael Tsarian even more. You'll have the opportunity in the next hour to call in and talk with him. And Michael, during this break, consider the answer to this question. What happens if you wake up and discover you're a reptilian? What do you do about that? All right, folks, we'll be back right after this.
Man, I wish I was in shape like that guy.
Yeah, I wonder how he trains to look that good.
Hey, guys, I'm going over to GNC to pick up some supplements. You want to go?
Now at GNC, Joe Weider's Victory Kit, scientifically designed for mass, cuts, and power cycle training. The Victory Line for the ultimate body. For the beginner to the pro and everyone in between, GNC, the authority in sports nutrition.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at your Blockbuster store or Blockbuster.com.
You can get more than lucky. With every Upper Deck hockey card, you get valuable points so you can win great prizes. Go to UpperDeckKids.com for free entry. You can get more than lucky.
Hey, how's the coverage with that phone?
It doesn't work that great everywhere, but
that doesn't come back to bite me.
Hello?
There's been a mistake. You took home a poisonous cottonmouth.
I missed that last part. What?
It could bite you.
I lost you.
Hello?
Besides, I'm playing with my snake. Wish you were on a more reliable wireless network? Verizon Wireless has the fewest drop calls of any national carrier.
Good.
Come give Daddy kiss.
Yeah. Verizon Wireless, we never stop working for you.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Michael Tsarian. And we are talking this evening about, I really don't know what you would call it. Other than, Michael, I think you would refer to it as the true origins of our world. Would that be correct?
Yeah, I would call it alternative history. You know, definitely the occult history of our world, yeah.
I think it would be safe to say that among academics, there would be few that would subscribe to your view of history. Have you run into any that do?
Oh, yeah, there's so many. And right now, even there's people publishing books, you know, on the very things that we've been talking about. There's even Christian scholars writing on this kind of thing. There are technical people. There are people from, you know, Oxford and Cambridge. You have the top brass. I mean, you can't get any higher up the academic totem pole than Max Flint and Otto Binder from MIT, you know, and CIT. And these people are writing on this very subject. I've already published books in it. You know, it's always been there, but obviously what we're talking about is very underground information. I'm glad to see that we're living in an age, partly because it's easier to publish books, it's easier to speak people's minds. So there was a crackdown on knowledge. People haven't been as free as they've been thinking in the different kinds of centuries that have passed. So you couldn't, you know, come out and voice any of these things, or even a part of, you know, what we're talking about. It takes a great deal of guts to be, you know, a Conor McDowell or a, you know, Commons Beaumont or Emmanuel Velikovsky or Wilhelm Reich. People need to never, ever, for an instant, forget that. The utter bravery and the guts of people like Ezra Pound and others who came forth to speak the truth, what they saw going on behind the scenes of reality that is most people are blinded to. But, yeah, you know, first of all, I don't, you know, even argue my stuff with people because I don't waste time or energy in argument. I got so many books to write and so many things to do, I don't waste a second, you know, arguing with people who don't accept what I'm talking about. It's their perfect right not to accept it. I will never infringe upon, you know, their freedom of thought. if what I say, you know, resonates with some people or it resonates with their personal experience or the stuff that they've been researching, you know, that is fantastic. And there is a community of people who are very much into a lot of this, as we can see now. You know, there's so many presentations. And even if people are not into the subject matter, at least accept and be happy that there are people who are able to voice all sorts of, you know, information in this world. You know, this is the age of the Internet. It's the age of people trying to break through the chains of thought and to have free thought. So at least be glad for that, that we're not in this Dickensian world anymore in which, you know, it was just so pedantic.
All right, now, let's go back to the question I asked before the break, and that is, I wonder if you were to wake up in the morning, someone were to wake up and for whatever reason discover, you know, by golly, I'm a reptilian. Okay?
Well,
now,
it doesn't really
what
like
are they
that.
To do with that?
Well, first of all, it really doesn't happen like that. Because, you see, I wish it did, because then you would be able to treat the problem, you know, much better. How do you wake up? How does anybody wake up and question their own identity? The questioning of one's own identity, the discovery of whether the voice in your head is really you, all these psychological questions are the most profound questions that anyone can ask. But I know the gist of what you're talking about. And there are certain people who are plagued with identity crisis, who maybe are not liking the sound of the voice in their head. They maybe don't like the sound of their own thoughts. They don't like what their thoughts are asking them to do. They may feel very bestial and very, very, you know, antithetical. They may get very unhappy when they see other people doing good and getting along with their lives and trying to do as much good in the world as they can. There's people who are tremendously envious of that. And envy is a very different emotion than jealousy. So there's people who don't like to do good. They only have to conform because, of course, if you don't do a certain amount of good and play a role, then, you know, our society has a certain amount of repercussions for that. But there's people who would love, you know, to be just raping and rending and doing all sorts of evil, and it's just beneath the surface. So there are such people who exist. You're talking about, is that part of the reptilian DNA within them? I would say yes, it is, very much so. I am a fundamental full believer in two things, and that is that, one, this tampering of our DNA brought in the whole question of evil and the whole question of violation to nature, violation to other people, and most importantly, violation to ourselves. And the second thing that I'm completely sure of is that in the future, this is going to be proven. I think we're on the verge of proof of this. Of course, the boys in the establishment already know what I'm talking about. That's evident enough. But it's going to be something that the whole world will one day understand, that these quaint metaphors, you see, in the myths and legends and the poems, we need to understand why it is that all cultures have the symbol of the ladder and the angels and the gods and the devils going up and down the ladder, you know, the ladder being an old, old symbol of the DNA, or the twisted serpents or the tree of life. It's all out there. And they often also talk about the temptation and the moral question. It's not just Christianity came up with that story. This is a story that's thousands of years earlier than Christianity, and about the choice mechanism, which is always fundamental. But see, it's a bit difficult, because if you're so, if your proclivity is so, you know, sort of skewed in one way, how does a person exercise willpower or choice, you know, to change their ways? Maybe in some people it's just overwhelmingly difficult. You know, maybe
all right, well, now, we live in a world where we're walking side by side, according to what you've said. We're humans are walking side by side with reptilians and don't know. Do the reptilians know?
Yes, for the most part they do. Not all. Not all. It's a situation in which, and remember, this is a form of DNA, but DNA is consciousness. So it's not so much a matter of biology, it's more a matter of thinking and consciousness. And, of course, an evil man's evil is his good.
Mm-hmm.
So in one way, they don't realize that they're abnormal. They may be programmed, part of their conditioning, part of their makeup, genetically, maybe to have a certain hatred for all of us. You know, I mean, if you want personal experience, I will just tell you that I feel, from what I've observed, that such people absolutely seethe with hatred when there is a real human person around them. Meaning, we've all got the alien DNA, But the alien reptilian person, or the person whose their consciousness is more skewed towards their alien proclivities, they are very, very anti. You know, there's a lot of antipathy towards the people who've done the opposite and who lean more towards the human side. And of course, I don't want to get into it now on the show, but the book goes into the fact that there was also a rival continent to Atlantis, which was Lemuria, and it was on Lemuria that great efforts were made through magic and ritual and religion and even technical to try and downplay the alien DNA. Now, the project didn't last long because the whole of the continents got destroyed, but while Lemuria was going, one of the most major, you know, plans one of the major policies on that planet was to try and condition out through a number of means this particular alien DNA. And we know one of those methodologies as yoga. Not the yoga we're doing today, but the concept of yoga. Yoga originally was an attempt to work with the DNA, and it got misunderstood. So when you see the chakra system and the seven, you see spheres of light and the two intertwining serpents, and this has now become the concept of the chakras, actually originally that was more to do with the DNA. And the process of yoga, our concentration, and all of that stuff that we now know today in a very, 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 very corrupted form, by the way, was an original attempt at psychic hygiene. But to get back to your question, absolutely, there are people walking around us who don't have any psychic hygiene. I mean, even the official police and the world's own criminologists know that. We're always being surprised by the kind of toxicity and psychic and physical violence of people in the world. But it goes so much deeper than that. And there are people who have, for one reason or another, identified with this alien DNA and are capable of doing atrociously cold-blooded acts.
All right, now, if I go into a doctor to get a blood test and someone else goes in to get a blood test, one of us is reptilian, one of us is human. We look, both of us look human. Are there differences that will appear in the blood test?
I think there may be. I don't know. I've got some serious problems with the way hospitals operate and all of that kind of thing. But, you know, I've never been able to trace it myself from what I've read, that it can be discerned through blood. It would be on a deeper level than that. It would be in some sort of a genetic way. And since I'm not a scientist and I'm not a person who's that interested in that area, although, of course, I'm interested in knowing, you know, what the latest discoveries of the experts are, I'm more a person who's, you know, looks at this whole thing from a point of view of consciousness and psychology. It's just that happens to be my forte. You know, I just don't have too much of a background in science. So, you know, we can leave that to other experts who are much more skilled in understanding whether or not it would be variations in blood type, you see, that might give us a handle on these kinds of things that we're talking about. I look to it more, Kevin, in a question of psychology and morality, because I do talk in my work a lot about moral superiority. The word superiority has now become a very taboo word.
Oh, well, a whole lot of words have become taboo in this politically correct insanity that has gripped the world.
No. And one of those words, I believe, is superiority, and that everyone is born equal and all of us jive. Well, yeah, in most ways, people are equal, and of course, in political systems, we have to accept for the good of all that there's a certain amount of equality. There's nothing wrong with that. We all have the same needs and wants and so on. But when we're talking spiritually, and when we're talking religiously, and when we're talking psychologically, you can basically throw the concept of equality right out the door. It doesn't exist. And specifically, morally. That is why, you see, there are so many variations even within one family unit or one dynasty or one community between those who acted a certain way. So the real, you know, superiority that the true philosophers were talking about, be they Plato or be they Socrates or Aristotle, is a moral superiority. And, of course, through the Nazis, this whole concept, you know, got completely molderized, and they try to say it's a question of blood and it's a question of race, as if great men cannot be of all different races. So we come off the back of all of that. and we come to the subjects off the back of the British government and the British Empire, and the idea, you see, that the, you know, Anglo-Saxon is the greatest creature that ever walked the face of the earth, etc., 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 you know, and yet, here, don't we have greatest shamans in Native American culture, people of profound spirituality? Don't we have them in Tibet? Don't we have them in Africa? Don't we have them in Ireland, Scotland, all over the world? You know, true aristocracy is not a question of race, territory, region, or blood.
Okay, we have to take our break here at the top of the hour. When we come back, we'll continue talking with Michael Tsarian, and you have the opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, to call in and talk to him yourself.
Man, I wish I was in shape like that guy.
Yeah, I wonder how he trains to look that good.
Hey guys, I'm going over to GNC to pick up some supplements. You want to go?
Now at GNC, Joe Weider's Victory Kit, scientifically designed for mass cuts and power cycle training. The Victory Line for the ultimate body. For the beginner to the pro and everyone in between, GNC, the authority in sports nutrition.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at your Blockbuster store or Blockbuster.com.
You can get more than lucky. With every Upper Deck hockey card, you get valuable points so you can win great prizes. Go to UpperDeckKids.com for free entry. You can get more than lucky.
You took home a poisonous cottonmouth.
I missed that last part. What?
It could bite you.
I lost you.
Hello?
Besides, I'm playing with my snake.
Wish you were on a more reliable wireless network? Verizon Wireless has the fewest drop calls of any national carrier.
Good.
Come give daddy kisses.
Yeah. Verizon Wireless, we never stop working for you.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Those of you just now joining us in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. My guest is Michael Tsarian, and we have been talking about the deep, dark recesses of the origins of humans and reptilians as well. Michael, before we went away, we were talking about comparing humans and reptilians. And you were saying that you think, earlier you said, you think that there are some that are born that do look very reptilian and that they live subterraneanly and they're kept out of public view.
Well, that's right. And, you know, this is ties into the whole concept of a hollow earth, which is not a subject I created. This is, a well-known, well-traveled concept that is, you know, maybe not so familiar to the public, but has been very well looked into by some very brilliant scholars for a long, long period of time. It's also in our mythology. And so common logic tells you that as the Industrial Revolution was coming in, and the powers that be wanted to sequester human beings in cities instead of in tribal units and in feudal society, obviously you couldn't have these reptilian beings marching down Main Street. So the idea was to slowly phase those out. I still believe, of course, that children are born that are very reptilian, and that I've had reports from many nurses and many people within the medical profession who totally confirmed this, that this, in fact, has happened, and that these children are sequestered away whenever they happen to be born. So there's a whole other subject there that we need to understand. But for the most part, you see, children, it's not even so much a question of the reptilians, because that's a kind of a side issue. There's not that many of them around, as there are human beings with alien DNA. So that's the part we need to really remember. The reptilians are a very small twig on the branch of the tree of this problem. The real problem is not the reptilians, but that the human beings, we have this alien DNA within us. So any child that is born, absolutely every child that is born, because there's not a creature on the face of this earth, there's not a human being on the face of this earth, and there hasn't been for many thousands of years now, that is not a product of this transgenic experimentation, not one. So everybody is lumbered with this problem. The only difference is that for any one of a number of reasons, you or I, you see, may be identifying consciously or unconsciously because of our past experiences or because of spiritual work that we've done or whatever it might be, that we have aligned more with our human DNA. That's the DNA that was here before the visitation, and therefore I believe that is where the tendencies of humanity and caring, you know, is from. And a different kind of a connection, a warm connection to life and to the earth. Whereas the alien DNA seems to be the colder, and since it's off-world DNA, on this planet it definitely works in a situation in which there's a sort of a lovelessness and a coldness. And, of course, we call it the cold-blooded, you know, it's almost like we see reptilians, you know, reptiles will eat their own children or offspring, or that they will not care if their offspring is eaten right in front of their own eyes. So this kind of cold-bloodedness is what we're talking about. It's, evil has been described that way.
All right, let's go to the telephone lines. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and where are you calling from?
This is Michelle from Quebec.
Okay, Michelle.
Good evening, Kevin.
Good evening,
Michael.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Okay. I'm just going to share a story about a reptile.
All right.
There's a site on the computer, iCar. He checked out abductees. Anyway, he was living in New Orleans, and he went back 3 or 4 days after the Katrina hit, eh? And the National Guard?
Yes.
Came up to him. And they reported seeing three, I think it was, reptiles walking waist high in the water. Well, he wondered why anybody would report this to him, because you know how crazy it was. But 2 days later, the police confirmed that they seen it. He asked them to go and if they would speak about it. But the National Guard, I guess, two of them said they might. But of course, the police didn't want to have any part of it on air. And we all know there's a part of our brain that's a piece of reptilian, and that if you cut that out of your brain, your whole mind don't work.
That's right.
Okay, now, Michelle, are you saying that it was reported that there were upright, human-like reptiles that were walking in the water in New Orleans?
Yes, in the old part of New Orleans. Anyway, what happened to him, he was online and he had power. And he went back. It was, I think, 3 or 4 days after that Katrina hit. And these guys, he asked him, he says, why did you get in touch with me? Well, they were cleaning up a house and they see an article he wrote. I don't remember what his name was, but he runs ICAR.
His name is Joe Montaldo.
Okay. Well, he was. I heard him talking on a radio show, and he says, anyway, these National Guard reported to him seeing these guys, and they walked right up with him with their guns cocked and everything, the National Guard, eh? And he swears that this is a true story. And he says it was confirmed a day or two later by 3 policemen that told him they seen the same thing.
Yeah, there are many such stories, you know, Michelle. This is, and Kevin, it's absolutely not as uncommon as people would think. You know, I've talked to people who've seen these. We have John Rhodes, who's a friend of mine, who's written books. He's done conferences with John. His website is reptoids.com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's other websites out there that feature a lot of these stories and also these sightings. And all over the world, people have said they've seen these things. But, of course, it goes the same way as anyone who says they've seen, you know, a UFO. Nobody believes it.
I think people who believe stories about UFOs, I think that number is growing.
Yeah.
Because video cameras and, you know, I mean, video cameras do not photograph hallucinations. They only photograph what's out there. And so I think a lot of people are more inclined to believe a UFO account than they are having seen a reptilian. Now, let me ask Michelle, are you still there?
Yes, I am, Kevin.
All right. Now, did they say that this reptilian or these reptilians that were seen, did they talk with the soldiers? What happened?
Well, I guess they just scattered after they were, you know, they see the soldiers coming up with their guns on them, eh? But the funny part was, I thought, was made the story a little bit more, to me, you know, more real, was that street police confirmed it after that they had seen these reptiles in New Orleans walking around.
Yeah.
I wish I would have got more on it, but I was trying to find more, but I couldn't find more.
Yeah. Well, I know, Joe. I'm going to call him and ask him for more details on that. Michelle, thank you so much for the call. Well, that's very interesting, very interesting. I had never heard that.
Yeah, there are many such sightings all over the world.
Do you have any sightings or do you know of any sightings where any type of conversation took place?
Oh, yeah. You see, there's John and Rhodes and some others. I mean, see, I do a lot of conferences, so I'm constantly running into people who are experts in this field and who've definitely got these accounts. Dr. Roger Lear has a couple of accounts that he heard were absolutely one workmate revealed to another workmate that they were reptilian, and he was having a conversation with them. Literally, one workmate discovered that somebody they knew for a long time was actually a reptilian.
Wow.
And there's, again, many instances of instances like that. So, of course, they would be having conversations, you know, a situation of duplicity.
Let's go back to the telephone and caller, you are shape-shifting. We have to get into that. You are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and where are you calling from?
This is Tony from Oklahoma City.
Yes, Tony.
How are you?
Outstanding. How are you?
Pretty good. I heard Joe on with George Norrie the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about he got back to New Orleans to about 3 or 4 days after Katrina, and all the power was out. He had generators, so he had power, and he had internet. So he doesn't understand how these National Guard guys got his number, but they called him and told him that they saw, I believe it was 3 reptiles. Reptoids, 7 foot tall.
7 foot tall.
7 foot tall, walking through the water of some field. I can't remember the name of the field. And they walked towards the reptilians, with their guns drawn and cocked. And The next thing they knew, they were walking away from the reptilians with their guns slung on their shoulders.
Wow.
There was they don't remember any communication or anything. One thing, they were walking towards them with their guns drawn and cocked. The next thing, they're walking away from them with their guns on their shoulders. And they have no idea what happened. And about 3 days later, New Orleans police called them and confirmed it.
That's just incredible.
Remember I was saying that the reptilians, their home is under the earth? Well, what would happen then, common logic tells you that if there's a huge deluge of water, where did the water go? The water, you know, would be entering into the caves and entering into the hollow earth channels that would upset these reptilian beings who might have to come up to the surface to sort of scope out what the hell is going on, and therefore you might have a chance, like this case seems to be, where the reptilians were just popping up on the top of the surface to find out what well the water is coming from, and then they were spotted. They were actually spotted because they got caught. It wasn't that they wanted to be seen. And what the caller's talking about is the mesmeric power. It's not very easy to do that when part of our own brain doesn't want to believe what we see, so it's very, very easy to mind control your perspectives. But even with a pretty strong mind, there is a lot of reports of this mesmeric, you know, thought transference based on normal hypnotism power, but magnified many times.
Now, Tony, you said, I think I just heard you say that this happened in the daytime.
Yes.
So how did they describe them other than they are reptilian?
As far as I can remember, that's all Joe said.
Okay.
Now, a few months ago, he had talked about he got calls from the National Guard and the police saying that reptilians and greys were seeing, but he didn't say anything about this the greys the other night.
Okay.
But right after Katrina, he did say that he got calls saying that reptilians and greys were seen walking around New Orleans.
Wow. Well, I definitely, now that's two people who have heard him say it, so I'm definitely going to have to get him on there.
It was on Coast to Coast. You could go right on and listen to the archive.
I would if I had time, but I'm busy running my show. Tony, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Kevin. Keep up the great work.
All right. All right. I'm definitely going to have Joe back on, and he's been with us before, and I want to hear about this. Okay, but these would be, you know, one of the things, Michael, that's interesting to me is people, if you just walk up to most people and ask, because I actually have done this, and you just ask, well, what do you think? Do you think there's a race of intelligent reptiles that can speak your language and carry on a conversation with you and are highly intelligent? And I've been told I've been watching too much Star Trek. Now, here's why that amazes me. Most of the people that I asked claim to be Christians and claim that they believe every word of the Bible is the word of God. Well, you don't believe it if you don't believe there are reptilians that are highly intelligent, that speak your language and can carry on a conversation with you. Because yeah, that's in Genesis.
That's right. They believe in angels and that the Garden of Eden story, you know, and that Lilith could be a part demoness, part, you know, bestial looking. I mean, it's endless when you come to the Bible and all the other scriptures, the Book of Enoch. But again, it's a matter of perspective. It's a matter of the limited perspective of people and this kind of penchant of consciousness to block out anything, you know. Thinking itself is a remarkably defensive process. The ego is just a mass of defenses. So anything that, you know, comes in that you know, people have a status quo within their own brain. You see, this is the whole thing we've got to understand, is that people have a whole republic, a whole nation state you know, within their own brain, within their own mind, and it's armed to the teeth. So there's very, very little receptivity. We may admire that receptivity if it's coming across the TV from Gene Roddenberry or Rod Serling or from Professor Tolkien or whatever. Well, yeah, we might admire it in others, but where is the line between ourselves, you know, thinking? And, of course, if a kid grows up to talk about these kinds of things or to get into painting or to show an interest in ancient mythology, what do you think his parents are going to do? They're wanting him to go on and become another doctor or mechanic or genetic scientist or computer programmer. They're not going to be, you know, for the most part, helping that child's right brain function and ask questions and find out all these incredible mysteries. And when you are talking to somebody about something that's a little bit fringe, and you do see this resistance, what really bugs me, it's almost like something out of Monty Python. The life that they live that's so sequestered and regimented and, you know, just this little householder life or whatever, to me is more bizarre, more crazy, more artificial, more elaborately created, more unsustainable than anything you could possibly bring up to them. Yet they're blinded to that. Just even what appears to be the mediocre life and the fact that you have, you know, the internet, everyone sitting in front of a computer, where's that digital information? You're not even plugged in. It's just out there in the ether. People accept that the data space is nowhere in particular. It's probably the most mystical thing you can think of is the internet. It corresponds to everything that we know about free energy, you see, and the whole concept of the human brain and storage and the ether and all of that. And yet people are blinded to that which is miraculous, even within their own midst. There are so many miracles just in your kitchen, just in your own life, just in your... So we're dead to the miracle. So, of course, in that deadness, if somebody brings into them another radical, you know, like radical theory 112, sure they're going to resist it because they're already resisting the incredible miracle of their daily life, which they become completely blinded to. The miracle of time, the miracle of growing up. You know, the Illuminati did not create time. Time is your adversary. You're born, you live, you try to experience, and then you die. So we know there's a lot of adversarial energy in the world coming down from political institutions and these kinds of secret society organizations. But let's forget, even if they didn't exist, man still has the fundamental adversarial problem of one day, you're not going to be here. So, you know,
well, you know, this
time, you age. Every day you look in the mirror, you're somebody different.
This deadness that you talk about. There are things in our daily lives that are good examples that I think people can grab and understand. In police work, part of police training is basic traffic. Okay, now a lot of people think, what is there to know about traffic? Well, one of the things to know is the effect that a highway can have upon a driver after a period of time. And one of the things that drivers experience is desensitization to speed. So you're traveling at 65 miles per hour. After a while, you feel you're going slow. And so you increase your speed. Without even looking, you feel as if you've slowed down. So you just give it a little more gas and you increase your speed. People that are afraid to travel at 100 miles per hour actually will not be afraid of it after they have been at 100 miles per hour for a few minutes. They will become desensitized to it. Many years ago, I moved to a place called West Monroe, Louisiana, and they had a paper mill. And long before I got into West Monroe, I could smell this paper mill, and I thought, oh, my God, what is that? It was the awfulest smelling thing I have ever experienced. After I lived in West Monroe for a while, I never even noticed it anymore. And I have to tell you, it was truly offensive to every nose that ever experienced it until you're there for a while, and then you're used to it. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
This is Lyle Lacey from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Yes, Lyle.
Kevin. Good evening, Mr. Sarr. I wanted to... You made some interesting comments, and I wanted to bring something up, something that everybody may not know. When you were talking about Hitler, his financiers were here in the United States.
Yes.
The big bankers.
Mm-hmm. And other countries.
Yes. And I was just going to say that I heard Mr. Sarian talk about the Federal Reserve. You know that the Federal Reserve is not federal, that the big, basically the Queen of England, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, all have interest in there, and they divvy up the money that they collect from us when we pay our taxes. That's where your taxes go.
That's right.
But one of the things that I wanted to ask Mr. Sarian, I think that after 9/11, the illusion is beginning to crack. I believe more and more people, if they want to find the truth will reveal itself to them, but they have to look. And I wanted to hear what he thinks about that.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Thanks.
Yeah, excellent question. Because, again, you know, the caller is talking about this whole awakening psychologically. And he also spoke in the context of 9/11. You see, 9/11 was a traumatic incident. So it seems to be that there's a very strange, peculiar, I don't know, just a law almost. You know, the Greek playwright Sophocles said that nothing vast enters your life without a curse. And many other people like Shakespeare and others have echoed that sentiment. And it seems that we can tell even in our own lives that we just basically freewheel on down and get into very, very regimented type of unthinking life styles. And we forget about life. We get into our lifestyle and we forget about life itself, the actual miracle of life that we were talking about a few minutes ago, until there's trauma.
Okay, we have to pause for a break. We'll continue with that thought when we come back from the break. And ladies and gentlemen, the telephone number is 1-800-289-1092, toll free just for you all over North America. We'll be back with Michael Sarian right after these words. Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com.
You can get more than lucky. With every Upper Deck hockey card, you get valuable points so you can win great prizes. Go to UpperDeckKids.com for free entry. You can get more than lucky.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at your Blockbuster store or Blockbuster.com.
Hey, how's the coverage with that phone?
It doesn't work that great everywhere, but that doesn't come back to bite me. Hello?
There's been a mistake. You took home a poisonous cottonmouth.
I missed that last part. What?
It could bite you.
I lost you.
Hello?
Besides, I'm playing with my snake.
Wish you were on a more reliable wireless network? Verizon Wireless has the fewest drop calls of any national carrier.
Good.
Come give Daddy a kiss. Yeah.
Verizon Wireless, we never stop working for you.
Man, I wish I was in shape like that guy.
Yeah, I wonder how he trains to look that good.
Hey guys, I'm going over to GNC to pick up some supplements. You want to go?
Now at GNC, Joe Weider's Victory Kit, scientifically designed for mass, cuts, and power cycle training. The Victory Line for the ultimate body. For the beginner to the pro and everyone in between, GNC, the authority in sports nutrition.
Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Michael Sarian, and we are talking with him about some of the really strange things in the origins of not only humans, but the origins of the world in which we live, the soup in which we swim. Michael, you said there's not all that many of the reptilians. And yet, according to your theory, they are the ones in control of the planet.
No.
No?
It's not the reptilians are merely a one small group who work for or are agents of the original masters. The original masters are people like ourselves, not the original masters, but the people who control the world are humans just like us with alien DNA. There's a big difference between having alien DNA and human DNA, you see, and then these reptilians.
All right, but we all have the alien DNA, do we not?
We all do, yeah.
Okay.
And the reptilians have it too, but the reptilians have no human DNA. You get the point? It's like they have the humanoid DNA of the visitors from other worlds, and they have reptilian DNA. But they are not themselves in control of anything, you know. I mean, or they may have lower level authority, but they are themselves creatures of those who are in control, or those who have basically are the architects of control.
All right. So then we have humans then that are leaning toward their alien DNA.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Now. So they are genetically then exactly the same as you, as me, as everyone else.
Yes.
Okay. Now, geneticists.
This is where there's a limit to what you can do by studying the blood and studying the biology, because it's ultimately now a question of consciousness and ultimately a question of psychology.
All right. Now, geneticists have discovered that there are 223 genes in the human genome that have no evolutionary predecessors.
Yeah.
Okay, so if there's no evolutionary predecessors, they're not from here.
That's right.
They have also discovered that most of our DNA is what they call junk DNA. They say it doesn't appear to do anything.
Yeah, well, that's the PR line they got to give, you see, because this is a very sacred. See, what we have to understand is that studying the DNA is an occult science, by the way. It's actually started by the Knights Templars up in Ross Lynn area at their institute there. And basically it's been under Templar domination ever since. So they're not going to just broadcast to the public everything they know about this subject, that's for sure.
What do you think
there's
is in there?
Mysteries to it. It connects very much with the Masonic ritual. It's not just hardcore science like we're being told, you know. So there's a lot of occult aspects to this as well.
So what do you think's in all of that DNA that they're calling junk DNA?
Well, that's the DNA that does the things they don't want you to know about. That's the DNA that basically they prefer you to, you know. I mean, can you imagine even the preposterousness? I've often talked in my work about the way that DNA is presented to us and even some of the terms that are used. You know, you don't talk about the spiritual still point. You talk about dark matter or antimatter. Look at the very terminology. You don't talk about, the hidden aspect of DNA or the spiritual aspects of consciousness. You talk about junk DNA, you know, because we don't talk about frequency. We don't talk about vibration. We don't talk about consciousness. Science has left consciousness completely at the door, and in pretty much the same way that the American Psychiatric Association has done it. Psychiatrists who leave consciousness at the door and think they can fix you just by, you know, selling you drugs. We have so much of the misuse of words, the way that DNA is even shown to us in graphics, like it's some sort of Lego set, you know, floating in hyperspace, like some sort of mechanical thing that kids would put together in their school, you know, in their science class. Nonsense. Nothing could be further from the truth. You know, the ancients had even a more organic way of showing the tree of life, the DNA. So the way the whole thing is being presented to us, the terminology, the language, it's so fraudulent. So utterly, I mean, from beginning to end. And of course, we know that they're not telling us the truth about the mitochondria and the DNA. They're not telling us that it emits light. It doesn't just receive light, photonic light. The cell, the mitochondria, the DNA emits light. There's a transformer receiver situation going on here. And the thing is highly receptive to consciousness. So whatever consciousness you are, it's going to affect your body. It's going to affect your thinking. I mean, thinking is going to affect your fate. It's going to affect your body, you see. It moves out into the world and your relationships with other people. It's just like the caller we just had was saying, you know, what is it that's going to make people become aware of all of this? You know, when you talk to them, and the trauma of 9/11 is that there is some strange thing that until people have trauma, they don't wake up. They don't leave that delirium that they're in. You know, it takes some sort of a cataclysmic event, I guess, to have people really open their minds up. Trauma can freeze you. There's a couple of different actions of trauma. Certain kind of trauma can freeze your circuitry, but another kind of trauma can also awaken you. It can blast you out the other end and make people, you know, leave the kind of tiny secular world that they've been inhabiting, especially mentally. And I guess that needs to take place, you know. And nature is quite capable of bringing in that kind of trauma so that we do have these paradigm shifts.
You talked about the delirium that people are in. It's almost, really, it is almost as if the entire world has been anesthetized.
Yeah, well, city life does it. I mean, you only have to look at the squares that people are living in. You can approach this from many different angles. That's why people don't have to believe what I'm saying. You know, people who are into architecture, you know, go and study the way cities are laid out. People who are into media, go and study the endless, you know, memes and just the psychic tyranny of advertisements and the kind of, you know, perfect Folgers family that's being handed to us prepackaged and the kind of contemptuousness that comes across, and this whole fixation with persona and appearance. You see, so we've been slowly drugged, you know, and the agents of the Frankfurt School, the agents of the Tavistock Institute, the agents of the Council on Foreign Relations, working with the media, have done wonders to it. They do it in sort of a twofold way. They help us vicariously process some of our wish fulfillment and our eroticism and all of that. They help to do that with one hand. But at the other hand, they also suppress our natural instincts and also help to, you know, give us these very conformist type of mindsets in exactly the same way that Marshall McLuhan and others have already pointed out in great depth. But it's very pernicious. So there's a barrage of different kinds of techniques that are being used on the human race. fear is being used, trauma, you know, war in foreign places. So this whole sort of consensus trance, it's not something that just got invented, you know, in the last lot of years. It's been a very slow, gradual corralling and psychic dictatorship based on the very geomancy of the cities that we live in, to the, you know, fluoride in the toothpaste, I mean, you name it, right? The mercury in your fillings, the pernicious acts of the schools, the 18 years of schooling that people take. My God, after you've gone through the what we laughingly call schools, it's not so amazing when you see what's going on. If you, the processed foods that people are eating full of poisons, I mean, it can, in fact, be studied scientifically as to why, just like somebody would study a, you know, species or genus of butterfly, you can study scientifically why the human race is in the pathetic situation that it's in. And it's been known from the time of Machiavelli how to do it. It's the carrot and the stick, you know. You both push man, where you tell him to go by cracking the whip and leaving him no choice, but you can also tempt him with some rubbish that he thinks that he wants. And you can advertise that rubbish and say, and you can even tell man that he wants it, even when he doesn't want it and he doesn't need it, and even when it might be disastrous for his own welfare. But you can keep indoctrinating a man or a culture to believe you need this, you need this, you need this. Hey, you know, you haven't got what is real inside you anymore because we've raped you blind, spiritually and morally. But hey, we'll hand you back all over here with some entertainment and some wish fulfillment, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a elastic band that's ready to snap. It's like a volcano that's about to blow. And so we're not only in a situation of delirium here. We got rising crime. We got rising violations. We got rising child abuse. We got genocide taking place, you know, in the world still. We got the World Bank subjugating whole continents, whole peoples. We got pandemic, you know, viruses let loose because people are not aware of holistic medicine. So it's a whole campaign on consciousness to try and remove men from their center, because man is a very powerful being if he gets into his center and he works from within his spiritual power. But there's been a sequestering of knowledge. There's been suppression of books. We're not taught what the great masters and authors and teachers were saying. We're not made privy to that. You know, it's okay to just live in a world of video games and vicarious, you know, fulfillment and shopping malls. There's just not that moral component anymore.
Well, I certainly agree that we, you know, most, the vast majority of the people that I have seen in every country that I live in or have lived in, and every country that I have visited, the vast majority want prosperity. And that is defined as more money this year than I had last year, or more things this year than I had last year. They want to be left alone. They don't want to have to think about much of anything. They want to be entertained, and they want more money or more things. And that can be acquired with more credit. And so when you talk to people about, you know, something as simple as geography, there's a commercial on TV where they are asking a guy to point to China on a map, and he can't find it. Now, that commercial keys in to something that I have noticed, and that is, most people do not know where anything is outside of where they're standing. Even in geography. If you ask someone who just finished a master's degree or who has just finished a PhD, ask them to point to Latvia. Ask them to point to Romania or to a whole region.
Yeah.
You know, like the Balkans. They have no idea. No idea. And these are the people who are taking the reins in their hands of industry. They're taking the reins of politics. These are the people who are becoming those who run the world.
That's right. Unfortunately, this is what you get, and it's, you know, you walk into supermarkets or malls, and you just hear this garbage being played. That it's music. The word music, you'd be corrupting it. The word music to say that this stuff is playing is music. Mm-hmm. And you think that human beings would be already savvy enough after we've come through Beethoven and Mozart and Bach. I mean, we're not stupid. We, you know, most people will tell you, they could tell the difference between beautiful music. Why do they then put up with it? Why do then people look at you as if you're crazy when you talk about it or mention what is this ubiquitous, you know, music that's playing everywhere? From every elevator you walk in to all these markets where you don't even have a moment of silence anymore. You don't have any peace. You're not being allowed to be in your center.
All right, folks, we have to take a break. And when we come back, we'll continue talking with Michael Sarian. And you can do so as well at 1-800-289-1092. What are you doing with your alien DNA? We'll be back.
Man, I wish I was in shape like that guy.
Yeah, I wonder how he trains to look that good.
Hey guys, I'm going over to GNC to pick up some supplements. You want to go?
Now at GNC, Joe Weider's Victory Kit, scientifically designed for mass, cut, and power cycle training. The Victory Line for the ultimate body. For the beginner to the pro and everyone in between, GNC, the authority in sports nutrition.
You're just a mouse click away from a better way to rent movies. Blockbuster Total Access. Movies through the mail plus movies through the store. One low price. Get a free trial at your Blockbuster store or Blockbuster.com.
You can get more than lucky. With every Upper Deck hockey card, you get valuable points so you can win great prizes. Go to UpperDeckKids.com for free entry. You can get more than lucky.
Hey, how's the coverage with that phone?
It doesn't work that great everywhere, but that doesn't come back to bite me. Hello?
There's been a mistake. You took home a poisonous cottonmouth.
I missed that last part. What?
It could bite you.
I lost you.
Hello?
Besides, I'm playing with my snake.
Wish you were on a more reliable wireless network? Verizon Wireless has the fewest drop calls of any national carrier.
Good.
Come give Daddy kiss. Yeah.
Verizon Wireless, we never stop working for you.
Get it all. Become a member at KevinSmithShow.com.
Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and to my guest, Michael Sarian. A couple of quick reminders, folks. The telephone number, and we have time for one very quick call, 1-800-289-1092, toll-free throughout North America. And another quick reminder, don't forget that we have rolled over into March now, and it's time for us to vote again for the podcast. The podcast, the link to vote for the podcast is at KevinSmithShow.com. So just go on over to KevinSmithShow.com and scroll down the page. You'll find the link that says vote for our podcast. I truly, truly appreciate your help with that. And I do need all of you to do that. It helps us, believe me, to be able to continue day after day to bring you great guests. Michael, what do we do about this alien DNA? I mean, we've all got it. And from what you're telling us, all of us, everyone on the planet is an alien human hybrid, and
right.
So we've all got this. Some seem to have tilted toward the alien side, and some have tilted towards the human side. What do we do about this?
There is really nothing to be done about it. This is such a severe, you know, breach. The first operation that caused this problem, although it happened millennia ago, is like a blink of the eye in nature. So nature is still, you know, sort of scratching from this atrocity that took place. Nature will be the agent that will do something about it. I mean, as we've already been saying on this very show, you know, you look around, most human beings are not in the slightest bit interested in handling this problem, or dealing very much even with their own moral sensibility. So it's not something that, you know, I've been looking into this question, you know, and it's an occult study. It's not something that the most of mankind is ready to hear or ready to work on. You can barely get people to act in a moral way, which is, of course, good for themselves. When I talk about morality, I'm talking about something where it's like Socrates said, to harm another is to harm oneself. You acting in a moral way is to your own best interest. I mean, we can't even get people to do that. The thinking is so skewed that people act in an immoral way, even though it ultimately brings them, you know, pain and loss, and in their consciousness, there's a conscience. And yet, it's difficult to get people even to do that. And that's with all the programming and all the schooling and all the indoctrination about acting in certain, you know, kind of moral ways. So these are matters of metaphysics. These are matters of great deal of spiritual insight as to what mankind's psychological problems are. And you see, I always say that when man will not do his homework as he has not been doing it, and we don't have the kinds of society, I mean, just face, it's a fact, we do not have the societies that are capable of bringing up children right and bringing up human beings right. We just don't have it anymore. And the reason we don't have it anymore is because the very powers that I'm talking about, These controllers, have systematically gone around the world and annihilated all the shaman and all the people of power and wisdom from the druids onwards, who did take care of this problem of psychic hygiene. They're all gone. They're all dead and buried. So we don't have the kind of teachers, and we don't have those kinds of experts in exactly the same way as we are now having a allopathic medical conglomerate monopoly, as opposed to a homeopathic one. Well, you transfer the same idea over to what I'm saying. Instead of the true therapy, where people are introduced to their consciousness, what is the brain, what is consciousness, what are the emotions, let's look at your emotions, let's go through catharses. You see, this is not incorporated in our modern society. We don't have people who really deal with it. Now, we do have people who deal with it in a non-shamanic way. They do shamanic things without knowing it, like the great musicians and the great filmmakers and the great artists. So there is a shamanic action taking place, but with a very small f. There are catharses taking place. There is positive identification. There is moral messages being sent to us. And there is an artistic and spiritual process, you know, in the music and out there, which is fantastic. But it needs to become more proactive. It needs to become physicalized. And we don't need all these neo-shamans and fake shamans, you know, out there telling us that, you know, join hands, love is light, you know, hold your crystal, and all of this fakery that the New Age movement has been involved in for 30 years. You know, people need to get into looking at their emotional side, and not just the intellectual side of life, and face not only emotions, but the so-called darker emotions. And so, I don't see many people in the world doing that, even with help. Even when you come into somebody's life and sort of assist them in that process, they run like hell.
So what do you see for the future?
The lie.
What do you see
because
for the future?
The beast has often, you know, presented people with a certain amount of, like you've said earlier, security, a certain amount of sensational fulfillment. Jump through these hoops, and society will be so glad to give you your security, your kudos, you see, your financial success and advancement. You'll have all the things that your sensational body needs, and I'm not saying that's wrong. People should have those things.
All right, so what, Michael, what do you see for the future?
What mankind is doing now is so wrong.
What do you see for the future?
Well, I myself, even though I, you know, have written on 2012 and done programs on 2012 and the coming of the future, I personally am not a person who really looks personally to the future a lot. But given the astrological time clock, what we have now is two roads that we can go on. We have this incredible once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to step out of these very, very constrictive and inauthentic roles that we're living, to start interacting with human, with one another as human beings, as opposed to some role performance, because that's all it is. Mother, father, sister, brother, daughter, boss, superior, you know, cousin, nephew, all this nonsense, lover, whatever, husband, wife, that's all roles. And it's enslavement to those roles that causes a lot of the problems that we're facing in the world.
How would we be able to have a society without chaos if we did not have roles that we play?
Oh, the roles, you can be in the roles, but you don't have to identify with them. What we've done is we've completely fallen asleep. Like somnambulists, we believe that those straitjackets is the real self. What I'm talking about is the not psychologically identifying with those roles. You can still use them pragmatically, but you don't identify those as being the whole circumference of your selfhood. That's your entire picture.
Mm-hmm.
We got to start dealing with human beings as human beings, human to human, person to person. I have not seen an example of when a person is dealing with another person as a person. It's so rare. It's always some subtextual thing based on the situation of the roles. So in the future, we have an opportunity now to start rethinking and revising this and revisiting this and reinventing this whole concept of these roles. Because the youth are not doing well at those roles. They already want to break out of those roles, but they're doing it in a dysfunctional and violent way. But the motive is correct. They're trying to rebel and break out of the roles. And many other people are trying to do it as well. And that's what needs to happen. So what's happening now is that you're going to have this breaking out of the cocoon. And with that comes a tremendous sense of trauma and a certain sense of vulnerability. But people have to get used to that. They should not fear that process of growth. Mankind is going through a great deal of quantum growth right now. I don't look at any of the things that are happening as negative, metaphysically speaking. If I did, I would give up. Because when you look around, it does seem to be so horrific. But we have to get to love that. We've got to understand that there's a reason for that, that this is a cycle of nature. The ancient Indian Vedic people talked about that we're in the Kal Age. But the Kal Age also has its good side as well. People are tested very strongly. There's not a lot of light. There's not a lot of guidance, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But then, aren't you, your own metal is then being tested even more, you know? It's like, okay, now you can really show your metal.
Michael, we've run out of time. I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us this evening. It's been very interesting and informative and challenging, I have to say. Some of the concepts are challenging and hard. Some a little difficult for me to get my mind around, working on it, and I think for some people very hard, very difficult to get their minds around. But that's a good thing. That's a good thing for us to have something like that to think about. But I thank you for coming and talking with us, being with us this evening. And if you will, very quickly, just give us the web address where people can go and read about a lot of this.
Yeah, they can get the book or the DVDs, or there's lots and lots and lots of free web stream. And you can get to it by going to michaeltesarian.com. And we have a lot of free material there for people to browse and get more familiar on this. Kevin, thanks a lot, though, for giving me the opportunity to present some of my ideas. I really appreciate that.
Well, it's been a delight, and I certainly hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Absolutely.
All right. If you will, just stay on the phone with me for a minute. Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Tsarian, and very interesting information, information that certainly steps off the trail, off the beaten path, and takes us in a different direction. What you think about it is up to you. But at least now you have the information to think about. It's been a wonderful week here. It's been a challenging week at the Kevin Smith Show. Things are beginning to settle back into some type of normalcy a little bit, and that's a good thing as well. And we've got a great week lined up for you next week. Don't forget to go over to KevinSmithShow.com click where it says vote for our podcast, and then vote for our podcast. I need your help with that. I really, really do. If you like this show, I need you to do that. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. I'll be back on Monday. Until then, so long, everybody.